Dr. Helene Gale, thank you for joining us today to talk about this new report from the Prevention Working Group. In the report, there's a vision of the future if current trends in HIV prevention continue. What is that future?
Well, I think it's a future where we could have two very different outcomes. If we continue to do what we're doing or no more than what we're doing today, we could have as many as 60 million new infections by the year 2015. On the other hand, we have the potential to decrease the incidence, the rate of new infections by two-thirds if we scale up what we know makes a difference for HIV prevention. So that's the vision that I'd like to see.
And what does scale up mean in practice?
Well, I think scale up means making sure that we have the right strategies, that the strategies that are appropriate for different populations are directed to the right populations, that we have the intensity, that the penetration, that that we are able to get prevention efforts to an adequate proportion of the population, and that we do it for long enough. So intensity, duration, and the right approaches for the right population, and making sure that that's delivered at a high quality.
And there are, at this point in the epidemic, many well-known prevention methods. So what are, to your mind, the greatest impediments to scaling those up?
Well, I think one that we always talk about are resources. Clearly, we don't have adequate resources for prevention almost anywhere in the world. So we have to make sure that we have adequate resources, first and foremost, that we have the right plans in place so that the right strategies are being directed to the right populations. And we have to also make sure that we don't have, that we have the adequate personnel available to be able to deliver the prevention services, and that we work on the environment, decrease stigma and other things that keep people from seeking prevention services and from being reached by prevention.
And when you started to talk about not having enough resources, you're talking about dollars, simply dollars, and where they're being directed?
Right. So right now, prevention is underfunded. In many countries, resources that had gone to prevention are being preferentially prioritized for treatment. And so we have to make sure that we have adequate resources for both prevention as well as treatment. And that if a comprehensive response means that we're doing both, that we're doing prevention adequately, that we're doing treatment as well as care and support.
And why is that? Why are there additional challenges to getting attention paid to prevention in the way that attention has been paid to treatment?
I think first and foremost, and this is not just HIV, it's anywhere, we don't have a prevention mindset. Prevention is in some ways the quintessential non-event. When prevention occurs, nobody realizes it. On the other hand, treatment is incredibly compelling. If you see somebody who's ill and you know that you can get them treatment, that's tangible and it's very compelling. And we should do it, for sure. We have to continue our commitment to make sure that people with HIV get access to treatment. At the same time, if you do the math, you realize we can't treat our way out of this epidemic unless we're continuing to decrease the number of new infections. There is no way that we'll be able to keep pace with the treatment needs. For every person that we treated last year, another five to six people got newly infected. So we have to make sure that we put a focus on, continue to put a focus on prevention. Prevention is also tough. It's difficult to change behaviors. If we look at any behavior that we've tried to have a dent in, whether it's smoking, whether it's nutrition and eating and exercise, you know, any of the things that are important for prevention, it's tough. It takes time. It takes changing complex and difficult behaviors. And it's also changing behaviors that are difficult for people in most societies to talk about when we talk about behaviors associated with HIV. So it's tough.
Is it tough for the donors, too, to begin to think about this in a different way to kind of equalize the balance between prevention and treatment?
Well, I think it is tough for donors. Again, there's a very compelling case for treatment. It's very tangible. It's easier to count what happens when you treat a person, the number of people treated. And so it's often easier for donors to think in terms of providing resources for treatment. But I think people are beginning to realize that unless we put equal focus and priority on prevention, we will not make have the impact that we want to have on ending this epidemic.
The report lays out how well or how poorly certain prevention methods have penetrated into low and middle income countries. Some of them are really surprising when you see it all laid out one after the other. For example, only 9% of risky sex acts are undertaken using a condom. 11% of pregnant women in low and middle income countries, only 11% receive antiretroviral treatment. After 25 years, you read this and you think, well, how could that be?
Well, I think it speaks to the very issues that this report raises, that we really haven't in most places scaled up or done prevention at the intensity, the level, and the duration that needs to be done if we're going to have a long-term impact. So if we can't expect that we're going to have an impact of halting this epidemic, turning around this epidemic, when our prevention access is resting around 10% for some of the things that we know can make a big difference. So we have to look at that and make sure that we're setting targets that get us much further than 11%, 9%, if we're going to be able to make a difference.
The report also lays out some examples of success in countries that you may not typically come to mind. For example, Cambodia, Zambia, Iran. Tell us about some of those success stories.
Well, it's good you bring that up, because for so many years we've continued to talk about Thailand, Uganda, Senegal, the countries that early on had some successes, and for many years we didn't have other examples to point to. So it's good to be able to see countries like Iran, where injection drug use has been the major reason for the spread of HIV, and they've had a strong focus on harm reduction as well as methadone substitution for injection drug users, and they've been able to start to see a decline in their infection rates. Places like Haiti, one of the poorest countries on earth. At the same time, they've had a real focus on making sure there was a comprehensive response, scaling up prevention as well as treatment, and they're starting to see their rates of new infections come down. A country like Zimbabwe, a country that in other ways is not doing so well, but they have been very aggressive about scaling up access to testing so that people know that they're infected, as well as increasing the age of sexual debut, when young people begin to have sexual experiences, increasing access to condom, looking at reducing the number of sexual partners. So all of those things, treating other sexually transmitted diseases, they've had a vigorous response, and they're starting to see the rates of infection go down. The same as Kenya, that has also, since 2000, really had a very, very aggressive national response that's been comprehensive, that has really made sure that those prevention strategies do get out to the populations that need them the most.
And despite that there are these kind of unexpected success stories in the report I think also conveys a sense of frustration. And I'm wondering if you and the Prevention Working Group in general, is there a worry that some countries have simply maxed out on what they can or will do?
Well, I don't think that countries have maxed out on what they can do. There are very few countries that have done enough, and I think the report points that out, that few places have taken prevention to scale in the way that would have a long-lasting, sustained impact. So there's more that needs to be done. Yes, it's frustrating because we've been saying this for 25 years now, that prevention in the long run is where we're going to have our greatest impact. But you can understand why some of the shift in the short run has been in the direction of treatment. We have millions of people who are dying needlessly. It is important to get access to antiretroviral therapy, but that can't be at the expense of continuing to do what we know can make a difference for reducing the rates of new infection.
Final question. What is your hope for this report? What impact do you hope it has?
Well, I think what we would like this report to do is to, first of all, make the case for the fact that prevention does make a difference, that we have examples around the world where it's making a difference at a national level and at a community level, and that we know what can be done. also pointing out the fact, because people often say, well, you've been doing prevention and you have nothing to show for it. But if you look at the numbers, if you look at the fact that only 11% of pregnant women with HIV have access to antiretroviral therapy, you can't say that we've done an adequate job. And I think it makes the case for why we need to do more. So I think we're able to show, yes, if you do it well enough, large enough, intensely enough, for long enough, you can make the difference. But there are very few places where that's the case. We want this report to talk about how do you fill that gap and make a convincing argument for filling that gap and recognizing that we can have a very different vision of the future. We can have that vision, as I said, where 60 million new infections are occurring over the next seven years, or we can have that vision where that number is reduced by two-thirds. What vision would you like to see? I think I'd like to see that latter vision.
Okay, that's the final word. Thank you very much, Dr. Helene Gale.
Thank you.